So I think everybody can hear me. My name is Sherazad. I'm a social scientist and very afraid of the word writer, so I say hack scribbler, scribbling hack. So what I'm going to read is a combination of things. I'm generally not sure what my process is, so I can't talk about it. I just manage to write if I have good noodles and a good red velvet cupcake. That is my process. Recently, I started, sometime earlier this year, I started a project where I asked my friends to send me their stories, their poems, their writing, their narratives, and that focused around street harassment, which is something that almost every woman in this entire gathering has gone through many, many times, no matter where you live. So I started asking people that I knew of simple questions about street harassment, because it's almost so evident that it is invisible, that you are accepted to live with it throughout your life. And while I started it with a group of people that I knew, I started getting so many different narratives and stories and poems that I had to soon create a small website to put it on. And within 2 months of starting this, we had 200 different narratives from 25 different countries. These were interviews, poems, visual art, prose, small films, everything that you can imagine about the concept of street harassment, which extended itself to gendered violence generally. So what I'm going to do now, and the project is called Mira Project. Mira is because of my grandmother. A lot of my own writing is based on my lineage. I'm Afghan Indian on my mother's side. I'm Spanish on my father's side. Mira has dual meanings because Mira is a very famous Indian poet, woman poet, and a favorite of my grandmother. And also Mira in Spanish means look, right? Mm-hmm. So Mira has the dual meanings enclosed or encoded within it. So the first thing I'm going to read is essentially fragments, pieces I've collected as part of the Mira project, which is, as some people might be aware, there's a concept of cadaver exquisito, or the exquisite corpse, which is basically fragments that you put together. And this is like a self-perpetuating code, which became a poem. That people who were, when they were sending the narrative, had no idea it would end up like this. I'm also going to name the people who wrote these things. Some of it is funny, some of it is poignant. It is suitably trigger-warned because it deals with aspects of sexual assault, gendered violence, and street harassment, and violence that women face. As part of the Mira project, I also ask women 6 questions. One of the questions I ask them is to complete, not a question, it's a statement actually. I ask women to complete the statement, my first time. And literally, it's an open statement. Complete it any way you want. You will be surprised at how many women refer to some form of gendered violence when you leave the statement in front of them, my first time. So my first time. Maybe the reason women cry so much is because you have poured so much salt into our wounds that we have begun to overflow. Rosie McNiff, Scotland. Memory that exists like bath foam. Late nights, it is a lonely monologue you speak into the void. Boys will be boys. Pratyusha Prakash, India, Scotland. And I am not allowed to forget their fingers curling tight around my wrist. And I am not allowed to feel like my body is my own anymore. And I am, and I am. Emily Palermo, USA. Girl says no, boy hears yes. This is the way the story has always gone. Girl says soft, boy hears weak. Topaz Winters, Singapore. I am in a t-shirt so long and so baggy, it could be a trash bag. I wear balloons for pants. He tells me I am dressed like a slut and I should be careful. Veneta Octavia, Singapore. In this story, I'm working as a cashier at a diesel truck wash. The shift is 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. and I am almost always alone. A trucker has come out of the showers with his bathing kit. He stops to get a cup of complimentary coffee before heading out to his rig. My shirt is orange and has the Reese's candy logo emblazoned across my chest. Being able to wear clothing, declaring what I eat is what I love, let alone peanut butter cups, is a big step for my body. So when the man with the coffee cup asks if I taste like candy on my top and leaves, I'm startled. For the rest of the night, I choke on my own tongue. Brianna May Estrada, USA. They broke my step, broke my dress, broke my lungs. They hollered, my hair fell out. I noticed myself for the first time in their laughter. Agnieszka Mausz, Poland. This is my body, which is bread for you. Take, eat. In this world, only armor makes my body mine. Only weapon holds the border. But that will change. Just wait. Jasami Clapper, USA. I cannot respond with her war. Language surrenders in stanzas, remnants of egg yolk drawn in wires in battle maps on my tongue. Nicole Sear, Singapore. I am Shiva in a woman's body. Blue, bold, built to demolish. Aditi Nagrath, India. Bitch says, I don't live for you, I don't want you. You are Icarus and I will melt you, burn you. Bitch says, I am not the poster on your high school locker. Suck that tongue back into your mouth and keep your hands out of your goddamn pants, because I am here to buy 2% milk and I don't care about whatever your 2% penis wants. Cassidy Black, USA. She's 16. She's 16 years old, by the way. And this is the first time she decided to write, right? In high school, several boys used to call me cottage cheese and cough it out whenever I would walk by. It is because I had a little cellulite on my thighs. For years, I thought it meant I was fat, even though I was only 120 pounds. Emilia Phillips, USA. I think of the freedom I have as a white person, the fear I have as a woman, and the invisibility I carry with me as a fat person. My survival song is magic, wading in the unknown. Heath Ray Hayden, USA. Nobody gives birth to a fully grown woman. Nobody is hung by her feet. Nobody is shot at the closed door. Nobody plans her suicide on the back of styrofoam plates with blue ink. Nobody exists. Kim Morales, USA. One of the questions I asked all the women who participated was, as part of my first time, to elaborate it a little bit more. And this is a response that I got. My first time, I honestly couldn't tell you. I became prey so young, I can't remember. One day I will grow. If I keep going, I will grow. Kayla Ankrum, USA. The other question I ask, and this is also an experiment we have extended to men to be a part of the Mira Project. I ask men and women to complete the statement, walking alone on a deserted street at night, I think of. And the disparity in responses is remarkable. When I ask men to complete the statement, I hear things like, when am I going to get my next drink? When will I meet my friend? Which bar should I go to? When I ask women, the responses generally begin with, do I have my car keys? Can they be used as weapons? Do I have shoes that are comfortable enough to run in if I'm ever attacked? Do I want to go in that alley? Do I have a male friend to accompany me? And this is not just in one particular country. This is from Cairo to Delaware to everywhere that you can imagine. So, walking alone on a deserted street at night, I think of, how much longer will I be walking for? Which side of the street is well lit? Does it make more sense to walk where I might be near others or somewhere where I won't hazard running into anyone at all? Do I wear headphones in a way to keep from engaging with someone, or will they keep me from being fully aware of my surroundings? Should I call someone to keep me company on my walk? Is a stranger less likely to approach if I'm on the phone, or does that make me seem distracted, easy prey? Is someone following me? Emily O'Neill, USA. At night, I walk quickly, usually much more quickly than I do during the day. I enjoy the wind on my face and feeling of my muscles working. This helps me to feel strong. It is not quite pleasurable overall, but on the cusp of terror where you can focus on living and the feeling of it, I like to return to that space like a practice. Anaïs Duplan, USA. I remember all the boys from before, clattering like loose change, asking to taste me, saying there is no such thing as innocent, like silence is compliance, like blood has been torn. Rachna Hegre, India. I'm walking late at night when a man jumps out of the shadows and grabs me by the hair. I pull a small knife out of my pocket and then I stab myself in the mouth, cheeks and eyes. Blood blooms from my face and falls to the ground. The man is so repulsed that he runs away. The moon turns into a horse and carries me back home. Nicola May Goldberg, USA. So those were the Mira fragments. And the project, and if you want to participate, it's called themiraproject.com. And you're welcome to submit, and especially would also encourage men if they want to participate in the experiment we're doing, because the larger goal with this whole project is to collect over 1 million voices and actually affect legislative laws in countries, because street harassment is absolutely not punishable by any law in any country, in most countries, ideally. So we want to change that. And we also want to create this into a large public art project, because I'm also associated with Blank Noise, which some of you might be aware of. And we want to take this whole discourse out and invite as many people as possible to join us. And we want to include all possible gender identities. So those were the Mira poems. Now I'm going to read something I wrote recently because I was obsessed with the TV show Hannibal. My orientation is in psychology. I study forensics, so I have a whole bunch of forensics poem, and so this is part of it. I've just found it very embarrassing to share it anywhere else before. So this is a conversation between Hannibal and Christ, which makes sense, right? Hannibal to Christ, a kitchen, an incubator, tuber, peel, brine, a crater, a cut, solitary. I am the air of knife, a thread of slit in meat, incisions to equator the oyster's lid. My native tongue spiced, voluptuous, as the patina of jamón serrano, which is a Spanish dish. My hands are clay bowls, measurements for murder. Here I hypothesize water lilies, Julian lotus stems, a plethora of edible blooming. The organ is internal, an incitement, taste as the collusion of gore and grace. All through me, a nocturnal appetite, crawling like a gourd wine. Green plucking the green, a poignant ochre. To unfollow the method, I burn the recipe into tufted smoke. Now which remains is mine, to intrude with metal and wood. No instructions to distort the appetite, the aptness of vestal curiosities, nude as the intermediate of all that comes with swallowing the unsaid. I feed you, and it is another kind of exorcism. A flourishing into worship, a sacrament, a closeness to the body of a god, a father who won't sit at my table. I wrote some things for what's happening in Kashmir right now. As part of, like I said, my lineage affects what I do and what I write. And I feel like I have a general universal affiliation to anybody who's displaced, because to give you a little bit of a background, on my father's side, I am what is referred to as a Roma gypsy, or Romani people, who are the most marginalized, most displaced people in the world. We are essentially nomadic tribes who migrated from India about, I think, 11th century AD and moved to Central Europe, and then made our way to different parts of Spain and Eastern Europe. And we are called different things in different parts. In Spain, we are called Gitane or Gitanos, and we are called Romani in parts of Eastern Europe. So as somebody who's displaced and nomadic, I feel an affiliation towards people who are fighting for their own homeland, because mine has been taken away. And also because we keep speaking about the Holocaust, and a lot of people don't know that millions of Roma people were killed in the Holocaust. Ironically, the world has changed and you have Holocaust memorials and museums and whatnot. In the last congregation to address the victims, or rather the families of victims of the Holocaust, Roma people were not invited because we were not considered appropriate enough for that congregation, because we are still marginalized to that extent, right? So I wrote these for Kashmir. These are two poems for Kashmir, fragments. It's called The Mirror I Won't. The valley stretches before me like an echo of God. Who amongst us can remain unwounded by this amaranth strophe of green? The first boy's limbs are tilted light wood. His hair is unlit newsprint. His heart was quartered as if a golden apple. We eventually forget him. There are too many bodies to remember, the precise silhouette tailored to the dimming of a blotted lake. All the houses we omit will remain standing like stubborn epitaph. This is the ethnography of missing teeth. This is a library of stolen fingernails. This is a lap full of broken birds. This is the holy asymmetry of choked up chinars, crimsoning tin roofs shrouded in a heresy of smoke. Arms of darkened copper dig through a time-coarsened vernacular. Soon, soft concavities belch and shudder with the gist of bloody debris. Their mothers will disappear behind veils, low clouds silenced by a murder of crows. Stilled feathers of black henna filigreeing the reddest horizon within their hands. Their eyes will finally be emptied of prayers and ghosts, their bodies frozen into a snow-limbed map of a graveyard. Part 2. All the men lined up in a tessellation of dormant volcanoes. My sky wore the skin of knifed fish. What doesn't kill you deafens you with the same questions on a daily basis. What is your father's name? What is your job? Why don't you have one? Are you carrying a weapon? Are you a terrorist? I am saw-bladed by a mule's rhetoric. My firstborn was named Veiled Arson. When they began to hand flamethrowers to those who had dreams essenced from clay, I heard the horse chestnut flog our attic's skull with the sadism of a bulletproof soldier. I know my love for this land is at best a myth, at worst a slur. Even then, this mud is what spat me out like a common flea. This riverbed galvanized the torque in my wings. In a language I am thawed from, a single word stands for both tongue and language, Zuban. Ya Allah, I'm already fossil, a yellowing flank planted in a desert of mayflies. All around me, raindrops skip like drugged white spiders loosened from a heavenly cupboard. God occupies me as a shapeless hunger. A million forgeries to articulate the loss of each limb. The elm of my spine was sedated, abridged to obedience. I can tuck the pin of a grenade between my teeth like a scared animal picking up its blind infant. I am begging to the ones whose boot prints lick my back like tire tracks in a graying snow. Tell me, when did the weight strapped to my chest decide to spell itself as a bomb instead of a child?
Ooh. Ooh. Woo.
So because I started with the mirror poems, these are my mirror poems, I also started a series of poems where I write, because my experiences have been so varied interacting with so many different women across the world, to write poems as Mira, who's very universal but also very individual. So these are two poems as part of the Mira poems that I have written. Mira as victim typology. Like I said, I'm obsessed with forensics, but I studied it. So. Mira at the dining table, clutching her kneecaps, knuckles cockling each mound of bone, the dulled blood of bruise flattening to the golden purple of Ammi's aubergine fritters. Mira with her teeth opalescent like freshly peeled garlic for Ammi's chicken liver curry. Mira with her mouth hotter than the stomach of Ammi's kitchen stove. Mira with her tongue folded inside the chest of this dumb heat. Kneaded bread, the wet wheat of a burning thickness. Mira with the lazy shipwreck of her hips. Her eyes full of biblical flood. Twin animals of her new breasts. A room full of mongoose-haired Noahs to ark her extinction. Mira's with her thighs pinked to skinned snakes, the cusp of pubis and a birthmark carved out from a difficult fruit. Mira with the eyes of sun melting above the coal mines, pupil coked with dhatura and milk. Mira with a nose as crooked as a witch's footprint. Mira with her lips like abandoned mail trains. Mira with her dreams of gardens where she can sleep herself into a stupor of roses, a song rising from her skin as if a bird made of petrichor circling the musk of mud. Mira after her father's radiation. In a hospital, God is a scar tissue. A dog breathes as if a slur slipping off my drunk uncle's tongue. I place the poem between a prayer and a profanity. Here is the plucked rooster of my mouth, redder than any exit wound. Here are the crows blacker than my grandmother's misspelled tattoos. I swallow the root of turmeric, stuff my cheeks with cupfuls of cardamom. Here's to homemade antidotes, a halt in the hell of motion sickness. Purge the vomit with goat milk and camphor oil. Chew the marigold off the garland, coiled around his photograph like a sedated viper. Morning fills the gap in my memory in an exact dose of steroids. Any absence creates an illusion of closeness. A callus grows on my big toe, and I seance the cratered fiction of skin with the pinprick of a hair clip. When the cancer came, his cells dominoed as if a cheap loss in a game of Tetris. His lung x-rayed in a charcoal map of the Andaman. Summer tiptoed a month later than usual. The henna green swirl of my skirt had stilled itself by then. My mother's anklets divorced their bells, were unhooked, shoved deep into the throat of a mango wood cupboard. Every evening, we sat on the porch swing of his hand-built pagoda, the obi of darkness rearranging the geometry of our grief. The fingertips of Java plum trees elongated with the extemper of parrots. My mother's eyes as bloodshot as their beaks. These birds never leave home, she said. They turn feral and empty out any tree. They'd rust a cage with a clockwork of mimicry, but they stayed. No diaspora clings to this wingspan. No pilgrimage across the arbor vitae of hemispheres. So we sat back and let the green venery wrap the dusk in an epilogue of plumes. Our hands cupping the storm, whispering inside each teacup. Our bodies turning silver with rain. Thank you. Thank you so much. That was nice. We're done.
There's no closing ceremony.
There's no closing
ceremony.
No closing.
No closing.
It's over.
Just leave.
The poets have stopped.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much for organizing. Thank you.